Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. In the aftermath of the electoral setback of the 2018 general elections, UMNO found itself in the throes of an existential crisis during which the direction and even continued survival of the party were debated. Would a stint in the opposition or the political wilderness lead to a change and a renewal, critics wondered. But just 3 years after that fateful moment at the crossroads, UMNO found itself again leading the government. And the question is, what has changed the party and for the country that it hopes to lead once more? Our guest tonight will discuss all of that. Sharil Hamdan is the information chief for UMNO. He's also the deputy chief for UMNO Youth. Sharil, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I want to start our conversation, Sharil, by looking at the new cabinet, the one that's recently been announced. UMNO firmly back in the driver's seat for this government, but you know, it's mainly the same faces and many are in the same role. So I'm wondering what the difference is with this government. What do you think this cabinet can achieve in the next 100 days that it failed to achieve in the past 17 months?
Yeah. Hi, Melissa. Hi, Sharad. I think the one of UMNO's chief claims at the start of this saga was that the failings of the previous administration or the government was a lot to do with a problem of leadership. So that was one of the chief claims. So of course, even with the same set of players, the hope is that a new, I suppose to use a football analogy, a new player manager on the pitch with the same set of players can hopefully yield different results. It's up to the ministers, it's up to the PM to prove that outcome. And UMNO, whether those inside the cabinet or outside supporting the supporting cast, will hope that that's what happens.
Sharil, though, I wonder if the ground has changed for UMNO. I understand the argument. My argument was very clear that UMNO would wanted to see Muhyiddin leave, not the Perikatan National Government and the parties that are involved fail. They wanted to keep that structure. But along with it is a lot of baggage. And I wonder how far, UMNO can carry that baggage without damaging itself.
I think the baggage is there, and the sense that the last 18 or so months previous to this change in prime ministership was a troubled one in terms of perceptions of the people and how people viewed the performance of the government. So that baggage is there, and it's up to the current set of lineup, and it's up to the new PM to prove people wrong. So I think it's fair to say that they're not starting from a clean slate, and I think they're aware of that. They have a deficit of sorts to overcome. We are hopeful that they can prove the naysayers wrong.
Right, and let's take a look at this cabinet. I want to ask you about the composition. I know a lot has been said about it, but you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, and particularly the conversations that are happening within UMNO. Let's look first at the fact that the Zahid Hamidi's UMNO 15 group didn't actually have make a lot of gains in this lineup. Noraini Ahmad was the only minister from that to make it into the cabinet. I'm wondering what kinds of conversations are happening, whether you hear rumblings of unhappiness about that, whether that's a source of tension within the party.
I can't speak to private conversations that may or may not be happening. But what I can say is this, in the end, UMNO as a whole will want to see this administration succeed, because whatever the disagreements were previous to what happened last week, now it's an UMNO administration, an UMNO-led administration. And our fortunes for GE15 will be tied so much to what happens in this administration. So it's in everyone's interest to ensure that at the end of this stint, however long this is, people will feel that whatever their misgivings of how this administration came about, they feel better off with it. And I think it's everyone's in UMNO's it's in UMNO's interest entirely for that to occur. So I'm hopeful that whatever disagreements or whatever groupings that may exist in the party will be put aside because there's a bigger shared outcome.
Right. But what about you, Cheryl? I mean, do you, your personal opinion, do you feel like there were missed opportunities in this lineup? You know, we know Azlina Osman didn't make it. UMNO Youth had lobbied for Mahasan to be the finance minister, didn't get the job. Do you feel like there were missed opportunities in this lineup?
I feel like what the lineup showed is that the prime minister, even with this, with a new, fresh start of sorts, even though it's not entirely fresh, as we discussed, the reality, and everyone knows this, he is somewhat hampered by the political reality of the day. Number one, this is what happens when a coalition is sort of cobbled up midterm because we wanted to avoid elections. Presumably, whatever that our other coalition partners gave, the list that they gave, was the list that they gave. And it was important politically for Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri to be seen not accede, but at least entertain, certain specific requests from other coalition partners. So I think that's reality. Number two, the MPs are the MPs. And people can say about why were certain people not appointed. But at the end of the day, these were the guys that won elections. And I can say this even of myself. I didn't win an election. I didn't get that mandate. So I think there's something to be said about not rewarding, but respecting that most of the cabinet lineup ought to be members of parliament who won elections.
I mean, sure, it's quite obvious that Prime Minister Ismail Sabri wants to stabilize his government. I mean, he's given the, Hadi from PAS, Tiong King Singh and Richard Riot, those ministerial level envoyships, as it were, to the Far East, to China, to the Middle East. That aside, I do want to ask you whether this is, in fact, a feather in the cap for Syed Hamidi, that he has delivered on a promise that people might have thought was fanciful 3 years ago, that UMNO will be back in power before the next general election. Is he stronger today in the party because of Ismail Sabri being in the driver's seat?
Now, I let you guys speculate about things like that. What's important, and I keep repeating this, is that whoever is prime minister, the fact is this guy is from UMNO. He's a vice president of UMNO. And it's in UMNO's interest to ensure that this administration succeeds. If this administration succeeds, UMNO becomes stronger. If it does not succeed, people will very easily say, look, you guys did all sorts of machinations. They will claim that. And then in the end, what did the people get out of it? And it's going to be very difficult for people like me to answer if that question arises. So that's what I'm focused on, and that's what most of the UMNO leadership is.
Can I ask you, Cheryl, whether UMNO is distancing itself from the Berikatan National brand? What is meant by the this rhetoric of Keluarga Malaysia that's been put forward now?
In terms of branding, I think it's quite clear that the party is prefers, and it has been so in terms of the branding, to not be seen as PN 2.0. So that's a branding question. Sometimes I think we put too much weight on little things like that. At the end of the day, if Keluarga Malaysia fails, this administration fails, it wouldn't have made a difference, whether we called it PN, BN, KM or whatever. So in that sense, I think it was a tactical, strategic decision to ensure that we didn't carry more baggage than we had to in that sense. But in the end, all of this will come out in the wash, and what really matters is how we perform.
Cheryl, coming back to the premise of this conversation that Melissa had opened with, which was that 3 years ago, UMNO was facing an existential crisis. What has UMNO learned? I mean, from your perspective, does the party feel that it is, in fact, in a process of renewal, recalibration, rethinking its premises in sort of thinking about politics in Malaysia?
I think that conversation and that ideological battle carries on. The groupings, I don't want to use the word factions, the groupings that may or may not exist in the party isn't always about personality. A lot of it is about the different shades of ideology that exists within the party. And that conversation is not over. Conversations like whether we need renewal and rejuvenation in terms of generational change, how quickly that happens, how that happens, that conversation isn't over. Conversation about how we decide whether we need to have a real plan and effort, a strong real plan and effort to win over urban Malays, non-Malays, and I think you guys know where I stand on that argument, or whether we need to just consolidate the Malay vote, whatever that means. I think that's the most important conversation in my mind personally that the party has to have, and it's not complete. We've been, for better or worse, for worse in my opinion, bogged down with this, you know, politics, right? Just straight up politics about who becomes PM, who should be in government, who shouldn't. I'm not saying that's not important. Obviously, that's important. And as information chief, I have to say that that's something that party has had to deal with. And, you know, it's for the people to judge whether this outcome that we have right now is the best thing. And that will happen in due course. But those two sets of conversations that I gave as examples, that's not done. And I'd like to very quickly come back to that as important, as an important set of battles, if you like, that we have to have.
Yes. Well, happy to have to come back to that, because I think that's important to kind of understand what are the conversations that's happening, where it's taking the party. But we have to take a quick break, so Cheryl will come back and continue this discussion in just a couple of minutes. Folks, stay tuned to Consider This. We'll be right back. Thanks for staying with Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin, and we're talking tonight to UMNO Information Chief Cheryl Hamdan. So let's come back to this conversation, and let me just follow up from Sharad's question about UMNO post G14, post Perikatan Nasional, and the revival of the party, so to speak. And I'm just wondering, those conversations that you're having, Cheryl, or within the party and also outside of the party, about where the party is heading. And I'm just wondering, what are the conversations the party is having about reform? Specifically, what UMNO wants, you know, Azalina Uthman is planning to submit a notice of motion to table a recall act to stop party hopping. Is that something that UMNO wants to champion? Is UMNO going to throw its lot behind Undi 18? What are some of the reforms that UMNO will now be looking to push through?
On both those examples, I think we absolutely should push. And not everyone in the party might agree, but, you know, people who believe strongly about things like reform will obviously have to choose which battles to really fight. Again, that's politics, but that's a boring conversation for another day. But things like recall elections or any kind of legislation that would disincentivize party hopping. Things like Undi 18, which, by the way, all parliamentarians had agreed. I don't think there should be any much more debate about the party position on that. And that's something that I personally will be pushing. People like Dato' Sri Azalina clearly are pushing for that too. So it's not, you know, it's not just a couple of us. There are more people who feel strongly about things like that. And the reform agenda has never, in my lifetime at least, been seen to be synonymous with UMNO. If this is a purely a circumstantial opportunistic moment in which UMNO for political purposes, wants to embrace it, people like me will say, yeah, do it. And, you know, if it's for instrumental, tactical reasons, I'm happier with that than to not have that at all.
Cheryl, you know, I've always thought of UMNO as a kind of a big tent party with all kinds of tendencies. I want to focus on perhaps what we might call the progressive, liberal, urbanite UMNO segment, and ask what is it that they want. I'm assuming that you're part of it, because it is about a range of conversations that haven't happened, including climate change, the nature of global capitalism and where work will be or what work will look like for the next generation of Malaysians and how they need to be skilled. What kind of direction would you like to see the party move in?
Big question. I'd like the party to be bolder in the policy prescriptions that it gives. And this is a long conversation that obviously we won't have full time for. But for example, I just give a couple of examples that come to my head. We're talking about managing COVID and managing living with COVID, right? The new Minister of Health has also reminded us it's now no longer a pandemic, it's an endemic. Cash aid is great. And it's something that I personally believe in, and the party also has fought for, you know, starting off with BRIM and whatever's evolved from that. But we can't keep going back to that. We've got to find ways to grow the pie, right? So what kind of bold policy prescriptions will the party be willing to put its name to? Things like the job guarantee, which I strongly believe in. I haven't fully convinced my party that that should be a party position. Things like ensuring or really fighting for zero coal by, I don't know, 2030. Something that I believe in, something that UMNO is not synonymous with and doesn't have a history of speaking about.
Right.
So those are two examples very quickly where when Sharad, you ask me, what does the progressive policy-based group in UMNO want to talk about? That's what we want to talk about. It's not always easy to convince the rest of our colleagues that this is important, rather than just fighting along ethnic narratives and racial narratives, rather than just going back to things that were done during Tun Razak's time. We still talk about Tabung Haji, we still talk about ASB, we still talk about MARA. That's something that the previous generation gave to the Malay community, if you want to speak in that ethnic language. What are we going to give to the modern Malay future? So I think, you know, there are loads of topics that UMNO hasn't really tapped into.
I really like that you brought up the environment, Cheryl, because, you know, with the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve making headlines recently, the degazettement making headlines recently, you weighed in on that topic. And for me, I'm just wondering whether this is something we'll see more of, more UMNO politicians or UMNO leaders championing issues of tackling the climate crisis, issues of environmental related crime or corruption. Can we expect UMNO leaders to champion this? Is there a conversation happening within the party about wanting to tackle this? Is there even vocabulary within the party to want to have conversations like this?
So I'm usually very secretive about what happens in meetings, so I think that's something that I should keep quiet about. But I will say this, in the last MT meeting, about a few days ago, or last week, I brought it up. So I brought climate change up in an MT meeting. I don't know if that's happened in the past. So make of that what you will. And in that meeting were, you know, senior politicians who had been ministers, deputy ministers, you know, bigwigs. And they listened and they had views. So at least we're starting that conversation. But to answer your question more fully, I think even you see in social media, the younger generation in UMNO are tapped into this. They're not Ketua Bahagians, they're not MPs, they're not MT members, but they're there. And I guess what we're hopeful for is over time, these individuals get into positions of influence and start to shape the conversation as opposed to, you know, trying to fix things at the margins.
Cheryl, who wants to join UMNO today? You know, there's a big rush to get
such a loaded question.
No, I'm asking you. No, I don't mean that in a rhetorical sense. I mean, who do you want to have in your party when you consider there's a rush to grab the young talent that's coming out, the next generation? The Party Muda is trying to get registered. The various Pakatan parties had their own recruitment machine. UMNO, when it looks out into the Malaysian landscape, who does it want to, you know, zap into their fold? And how are you doing that?
This is an extension of the conversation we've been having. It depends on the kind of UMNO wants itself to be. If it wants to be a Malay, you know, an ultra-Malay kind of party, then it will want to attract purely the Puritan, purist, conservative Malay base. But if, like me, it wants to come back or go back to a broad tent kind of party, it wants to really reform and be 3-4 steps away from its recent past in terms of what the perception has been about corruption, about a party for all Malay men, about, I don't know, you guys will know better what the vocabulary is when people who watch consider this, consider UMNO. Then, obviously, it's a different crowd. We want people who talk about all the issues that we talked about in the last couple of minutes. And that's a battle that people in UMNO will have to decide what the outcome ought to be. And it's an extension of that question. So I can't answer right now, but absolutely, what kind of people does UMNO want to attract? Because the real question is, what kind of UMNO does the current UMNO leadership want UMNO to be?
Right. Cheryl, you talked a little bit earlier about preparations for GA15. And you mentioned a little bit about the conversations happening within the party about whether the party still is able to represent the Malay ground. And I wanted to tap you for a better understanding. What does the party, how has the party understand the Malay voter of today to be, or the Malay voter of the next general election to be, compared to, say, the past general elections, the GE14, has that ground changed? Has that voter base changed in terms of what is important to them and what they would like to see from their leaders?
That ground has changed so much. And that ground is absolutely not homogenous. And to think otherwise would be a grave mistake for UMNO. Obviously, they want different things based on what kind of segment the Malay voter that we speak of is. And I feel that if UMNO continues to think that having more Malay voters in a particular area means that we win that seat, that would be living in, I don't know, 2 decades ago. You only have to see places like Shah Alam, where more than 70% of their voters are Malays. And Pakatan Harapan wins that seat easily. You only have to look at a number of other seats that, you know, the same kind of demographic to tell you that it's no longer simply about having a majority Malay seat and say that, oh, Tu Kerusi Melayu, UMNO akan menang. And give me another 30 seconds on this. And this is why I believe that for Undi 18, ideally, we stick to the original plan. You have Undi 18 together with automatic registration. But in my opinion, UMNO shouldn't say that if automatic registration does not happen or cannot happen for whatever logistical reasons, then we will pull support for Undi 18. Simply because we wanted to say that, oh, we want to make sure there's more Malay voters who automatically get registered, rather than allow for, you know, the typical registration process where Malays might not register. Number one, it's our job as Pemuda and Putri to go and get people to register. And if we fail to do that, it's our failing. Number two, our support for Undi 18 is not premised, it shouldn't be premised on the fact that we want a huge surge in Malay voters, thinking that that would be an advantage to us. So on a principle point, it's wrong. On a political calculation point, I don't think it's as simple as that.
Shara, there are a lot of interesting points that you raised, but unfortunately we've run out of time on the show. So we must have you back sometime to continue this conversation. Thank you for joining us on the show tonight. That was UMNO Information Chief Cheryl Hamdan wrapping up this episode of Consider This. But before I leave you tonight, a reminder that you can get the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com as well as our Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.